Hour number three, Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on this Thursday. We're live at the Omni Nashville Hotel at Bar Lines. And I guess we should say that if you hear noise in the background, I don't know what's going on necessarily, but the fire alarm is going off, so either we're being invaded by the Klingons or somebody may have pulled it. I don't know, but we'll. So far, we're good. I think so. We're just gonna hang out
right
here for now. But we say hello to Greg Wyshynski from ESPN, senior NHL writer with them, and of course he is brought to you as always by Old National Bank. Get old, Greg. What's up?
Now I feel bad for not having done this interview on the streets of Manhattan, so I could have ambulances going by as your fire alarm goes off and really,
yes,
really capture some sound, some natural sound.
I'm now being told it's just a test, so we're good there. But yes, the natural sounds would be something for sure on the streets of New York. So I want to start with your colleague there at ESPN. Rachel has written an article about different trades that could be made after the roster freeze is lifted, which is going to start midnight on Saturday and go until December 28th. And the first one is Washington Capitals acquiring Ryan O'Reilly from the Predators with 25% salary retained, and the Preds would get forward Hendricks LaPierre and a 2026 first-round pick. I don't know much about Hendricks LaPierre, but could be interesting if Barry Trotz decided to make a move similar to that.
Yeah, Hendricks is a good prospect, good player, has a little sandpaper in his game, as it were, but you know, I think what Rachel captures is what the going rate for someone like O'Reilly could be, which is an established top prospect level player and then a first round pick going back the other way. I mean, given what teams need out there and given the market for centers, I still think O'Reilly is probably top of that food chain. You know, Philip Deneau with the LA Kings is someone to watch, who's kind of the same mode of player. He hasn't been getting much ice time with them, and I think the expectation is that he's going to probably be traded at some point. But as long as Calgary is hanging on to Nazem Kadri, and it looks like they are for at least for now, I think O'Reilly is clearly the class of the trade board when it comes to centers that have a good, solid 200-foot game.
Yeah, but what I'm interested to know is, you know, Barry was asked last week when he made a small trade sending Spencer Stastny to Edmonton. You know, he was asked if the recent play of the team has kind of changed how he might look at things. He said no, that GMs are all calling each other right now. He's listening. But, I mean, the team's playing better. So, it you know, and they're, what, 5, 6, 7 points out of a playoff spot, and it's not even the first of the year yet. So, in your mind, when is the point where a team like the Predators should maybe act on some of these phone calls, or, you know, how long do they sit and wait and see what the team does?
Oh, I don't think there's any harm in waiting until, you know, the Olympic break. I mean, give them some runway to see if they can play their way a little bit closer to the bubble. And if they don't, though, you know, I don't think it dramatically impacts anything. I think there's going to be teams that keep their powder dry in the hopes of acquiring Ryan O'Reilly, because obviously he's not just a player for the regular season, but his postseason pedigree is one that other players that might be on the market can't match. You know, listen, I checked the numbers on Stathletes, which is the analytics company that ESPN works with, because I wanted to see what they thought of the Predators' chances. They have the Predators at like a 20% chance of making the playoffs, which is not nothing, right? Like it's a lot higher than I thought it was going to be. So, you know, listen, there's been an uptick, obviously 6-4 in their last 10. Let's see how this thing plays out for a little bit. And then there's going to be plenty of time to make some of the changes that they probably end up making, assuming that this team can't rise up to the wild card.
Talking to Greg, I'm sorry, this alarm just gets louder and louder. I apologize, Greg, for all that. Greg, let me ask you this. The news here, Nick Saban buying into the Nashville Predators. Look, I know it doesn't make top story in NHL and for all you guys, but what does that look like from where you sit when a guy like Nick Saban buys into an NHL franchise? I think it's pretty damn cool.
I think it's cool, too. Not as cool as air raid sirens going off during an interview. But but pretty cool nonetheless. Listen, I checked in on that when the news was announced. It is a pretty cool thing. You know, I think the NHL has certainly been an interesting place insofar as ownership goes. You know, we just saw the Pittsburgh Penguins get sold for like $1.7 billion. You know, the idea that you're going to have some ownership groups inviting some minority owners in. The Carolina Hurricanes, for example, are looking to sell a chunk of that team to help finance Tom Dundon's deal to buy the Portland Trailblazers. You know, it's an interesting time in the sense that sports teams are a extremely valuable commodity because sports remains one of the things that plays well on streaming and plays well on linear, and sports rights are going to be forever a valuable commodity because of the nature of that content. And so people want in, and, you know, seeing Saban buy in was kind of a cool thing. And hopefully down the line, maybe they can incorporate him into some promotional stuff down the line too.
I love it. Last night, the Carolina Hurricanes were in town, and somebody was talking about building that franchise. You know, they go nine seasons. They win the cup in 06. They go nine seasons, don't make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. They change the uniforms in 18. They get back into it. And somebody said they built the team the right way. You just had to have patience with everything. And I go through and look at this team, the Carolina team. A, it doesn't get talked about enough, right? Because do we take a team like this for granted, Greg? Because they're just good every year.
We take them for granted because they're not better. Let's be honest. I mean, like, if this team had played for a cup, I think that they would be lauded more than they are. As it stands, they're a team that we do take for granted in the sense that every season they're always near the top of the division. They play extremely well fundamental defensive hockey under Rod Brind'Amour. And then when they get in the playoffs, it always seems like the same story, which is that they just can't get that one goal at a critical time or that one save in a critical time to get through the Eastern Conference. Now, they've tried to remedy that the last two seasons where they traded for Jake Gensel of the Penguins. And that didn't translate into you know, anything more than what they usually do in the playoffs. And they, of course, make the Mikko Rantanen trade, and that lasts only a handful of games before they flip them to Dallas. I think just the team they have now, despite not having one of those marquee scoring acquisitions like they've had the last couple of years, top to bottom might be their best offensive team they've had under Brind'Amour. Right. And so I actually think that they've got a real legit chance of emerging from the Eastern Conference, provided that, you know, Florida maybe doesn't get Barkov back on game one of the playoffs and does this thing again, because I think Carolina's got a really good team this year.
I think it's funny that the GM, Eric Tulsky, his first consulting after he started doing all the blogging stuff, his first consulting project was Nashville Predators during the 2012 season. I just find all the connections interesting in my life.
Well, Tulsky's someone that a lot of us in the media admire because it's aspirational. You know, like this guy didn't, you know, wasn't a Conn Smythe winner. You know, this guy was somebody who came in through the pretty much through the blogging community, but also being an absolute genius in his academic background, and then worked his way through the system, got the necessary experience working in front offices to eventually ascend to the top job in Carolina. And again, like, you think of the boldness that team has had in some of their acquisitions, that goes hand in hand with having somebody with an analytic mind and somebody who is able to, you know, take a real hard look at his own talent pool and make tough decisions on players in order to try to acquire better ones.
Greg Wyshynski is with us. With the acquisition of Quinn Hughes, do you think Minnesota is a cup caliber team?
So that's a tough question to answer for two reasons. One is that I still think they're a donut. I don't think they've got the center position right now, but I do think that you have to give them a little bit of leeway that the Quinn Hughes deal is not the last one they're going to make, and that they could remedy that situation, you know, down the line before the trade deadline. The second problem with answering that question is the fact that Colorado and Dallas exist. Yeah. and as good as they're going to be, and again, like, they've done a really good job now getting a defenseman in Quinn Hughes that is every bit as good as Cale Makar and better than Miro Heiskanen, the other two great defensemen that are in that mix of those three teams, but they certainly don't have a Nathan MacKinnon, and they might not have a Wyatt Johnston on that team. And I think that's the real issue for them going forward. But again, there's time for them to remedy that situation in the middle. And if they do that, then yeah, I think they stand toe-to-toe with anybody in the West.
Well, and I know that there's some Preds fans who are probably thinking this too. You know, how do you rate John Hines? I mean, with the roster he now has. I mean, look, I liked John Hines. I thought, you know, considering what he had to deal with coming in middle of the year and then COVID and all of that, like he did a decent job, and ultimately they decided to make the change. But I think he's done a good job in Minnesota since getting that job. But, you know, how do you rate him with a good roster?
Yeah, I mean, we'll find out, right? I mean, it's not only just a good roster, but it's also them finding a solution and goal that they've been looking for a long time as well, with Wallstedt looking like he's every bit the franchise goalie they've been hoping that he could be. You know, this is a team that's had strong defensive fundamentals. They've at times struggled a little bit offensively beyond what Kaprizov and Boldy give them. So, yeah, we'll see what kind of team John Hines can craft there. He certainly has the pieces to try to do something special.
Greg, this weekend we've got a really cool thing happening back-to-back. Toronto comes to town Saturday. The Rangers come to town Sunday. I know you live in New York and you got the Islanders, you got the Devils and the Rangers, all that happens. But, I mean, when you look at this, I mean, if you're a hockey fan living in the Deep South, I mean, what a weekend, right, with the Rangers and the Maple Leafs coming to town?
Sure. I mean, two teams that are extremely intriguing insofar as, like, you know, the seasons that they're having. In Toronto's case, it's them trying to move up the standings with the acknowledgement that their entire roster changed once Mitch Marner ended up in Vegas. You don't replace a 100-point winger like that. And I think they've really struggled to figure out what life after Marner looks like. And, you know, also Austin Matthews, their franchise player, has simply not been himself this year for whatever reason. He's had an uptick lately, but overall hasn't necessarily been himself. And so there's been a lot of hand-wringing in Toronto about that. And then the Rangers, you know, the Rangers are kind of what I thought they'd be, which is a team that is exhibiting a lack of depth in some places, especially on the blue line. That's probably going to keep them from really being a contender. But overall, it should be good enough to make the playoffs and has arguably – you know, one of the best goalies in the world, and Igor Shesterkin. So two intriguing teams that are still trying to kind of like find their footing and really make a run at it this year. But always exciting times when they come to town.
Like, how far do you live from like the Meadowlands? If you want to see the Devils play, how far do you live from there?
Oh man, you're showing a little bit of age on that one. They moved to Newark. Like,
did they? Like, oh my God. Okay.
Oh yeah, man. They moved to Newark like about 15 years ago, and so like, I can get there pretty easily. By car, it's probably about 40 minutes. There's like two different trains that can take you there too. But the easiest one for me is Madison Square Garden. I can hop on the subway and get there in about a half an hour, 25 minutes. And that's usually where I go and catch teams when they come to town on practice and stuff like that. So the hardest one to get to is the Islanders. That's one where you got to kind of plan your day around New York traffic to get it back, to get out there and then drive all the way back. So it's cool, man. I realize how lucky I am doing this job to have three teams in the area where there's always, you know, somebody in town and you can catch a game or catch a practice. And it really makes doing this job a lot easier.
That's good that I'm not up there because I'd be calling from the Meadowlands like, Greg, where are the Devils playing, damn it? Nobody
up.
Here.
Here's the funny part, right? So the arena they used to play in, Brendan Byrne Arena, it still exists. Like, it's still there. But surrounding it is like New Jersey's version of the Mall of America. So it's just this like empty shell of a building, like this ghostly building that's still there. And I think that you can go inside of it and stuff if you have an event or something. And it's next to this gigantic shopping mall. It's a real trip to go to that mall and see a place where they won, you know, Stanley Cups just kind of sitting there, not even being used.
I just think that what the Continental Airlines Arena, was that what it was called?
Yeah.
I mean, I saw Vanderbilt play a Sweet 16 basketball game. That's an iconic, underrated, I think, buildings because there's a lot of things that took place there.
Dude, that's where I grew up. That's where I grew up watching the Devils. I grew up watching the Nets. And the thing I always remember about that place is my dad is extraordinarily cheap. So we used to sit like last row of the upper deck. And this is, that was an old building before they realized you could do like a mezzanine, you know?
Right.
So like if you were in the last row of the upper deck, you were literally wheezing from how high you have to climb to get to your seats. Because that's how the old stadium used to be built. I got nothing for love for that place. I was in the building game 4, 95 Stanley Cup final to see the Devils win the cup for the first time as a fan. Like it is, it's a special place for me. And my favorite thing about that place, by the way, the official attendance for hockey games at the Meadowlands was 19,040 people, because at the time, the last time the Rangers won the Stanley Cup was in 1940. So they made the attendance number for the Devils games the Rangers Stanley Cup curse year. I love that about that place.
I'm also jealous. You probably got to see Drazen Petrovic play basketball, didn't you?
He was my favorite player growing up, man.
Yes!
I got to see Drazen play. I got a Drazen jersey. I still remember my dad leaving a note on my door before school telling me about what happened with Drazen with the car crash.
Right.
But, yeah, for a while it was awesome to be a Nets fan because they had a collection of really sort of interesting players, him, Derek Coleman, Mookie Blaylock, and players like that. And you know, the whole existence of the franchise was basically to come see the players that come to town. I still remember going to Nets Bulls games when I was a kid, and I was probably one of 10 Nets fans in the building because everybody else was there to see Jordan.
Right. Oh, that's great.
Did you attend SummerSlam 1997 or SummerSlam 2007?
No, I don't think I did, but I did see a lot of WWF there when I was a kid, and I will tell you that the first when Jake the Snake Roberts first came to WWF, well before he became like a star, I remember seeing a match there with him, and he had the snake in the bag. And we were all kind of looking at the bag, and we're like, this thing's moving. What is in the bag? Because at that point, we didn't know what the gimmick was, right, where he's literally taking the snake out and draping it over his opponents. And so it was a trip to see him do it live before he actually, like, was on television and stuff.
Oh, fantastic.
You know, it's funny. Our question of the day, Greg, is are you or are you not terrified of snakes? I kid you not. That's our question of the day.
That's funny.
I will crush spiders. I have killed a rat. I am not a snake guy. Like I am at all. Like if I'm on a hike and I see something slithering, I'm like taking another pass around.
I'm with
it.
You.
I am not a snake guy at all.
Would you have done? I mean, if Jake the Snake would put a snake around your neck, would you be like, no, I'm not in
no.
this one.
Hell no.
I would have gone catatonic like I do at the dentist, where I would just kind of like walk to a happy place and just hope that it's over.
Oh, Greg, thank you as always. I think we talked like 10 minutes of hockey and 10 minutes of arenas, but this was fantastic.
That's all right.
So appreciate it as always. We're off next week, obviously. So happy holidays to you and the family.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy holidays, everybody. Thanks again for the time, and everybody stay safe, and hope everybody gets what they want at the holidays.
Yep, absolutely. We'll talk again soon. Thank you.
Take care.
Greg Wyshynski, senior NHL writer for ESPN, joins us every Thursday here on Chase and Big Joe. good stuff there. We'll come back with more from the Omni Nashville Hotel at Bar Lines on 102.5 The Game.